Back now with a new episode coming up of the Game Day Cube NFL show. We will go through week one of the season, all 16 games, my thoughts on all 16 games. Then we will look ahead to the opening lines and where the lines sit right now for week two. And as always, we will do picks on the Game Day Cube sports experience. So if you haven't subscribed to that podcast, please subscribe to the Game Day Cube sports experience and also subscribe to this one. And then we'll end on, well, the news of the time right now, or at least this week, the Antonio Brown saga and my thoughts on where it sits now that he is a New England Patriot. As I kind of hinted to as a possibility on the Game Day Cube sports experience this past Saturday morning. All right, so we'll get right into it with the NFL Week 1 recap. So let's get into the show. Welcome to episode number 5 of the Game Day Cube NFL show. I am your host, Isaac E. As this podcast is a spinoff of the Game Day Cube sports experience, which allows me to do in-depth conversation on each individual sport or league. Soccer is a combination of things with MLS, the European Big Five, and international play. The NFL show is obviously the NFL show. MLB is MLB show. NBA is NBA show. And NHL is NHL show. As the seasons begin for the NBA and NHL, it will allow us to do a weekly similar to this. It won't be me going through every single game like I'm going to for the NFL because there's just too many, but it'll allow me to recap certain games that happened during the week in the NBA and in the NHL. And we also will be doing that going forward with the MLB show, which has been kind of on a hiatus for 2 weeks as we've restructured how we want these podcasts to operate around this sphere of our flagship podcast, the Game Day Cube Sports Experience. All right. Week one. We'll go in order through the games. And spoiler alert, if you didn't see the games or if you DVR'd them and you're going to watch them later, you probably want to start by pausing this and coming back to this later or turning it off. But I'm going to go through in order. We're doing this podcast on a Tuesday, so at this point, most people should have known by now what happened in these games. Green Bay played Chicago, and were able to defeat the Bears 10-3 on the opener on Thursday night. And this game provided nothing. Nothing in regards to anything to remember. It was probably one of the most boringest NFL games I've watched in quite some time. This was unfair to give it a referendum on Mitchell Trubisky. However, it is sort of a referendum on Mitchell Trubisky because he wasn't good. And the offense was very much paint by numbers by the Bears. They would accomplish one or two things on a drive, maybe within a possession, and then it would be a terrible third down. Or they could move it 20, 25 yards, and then they would bog down. I'm not taking anything away from the Packers defense that played very good. But the Bears have enough weapons and enough talent on paper that they should have trumped the Packers' talent on defense. And I know the Packers have made some changes to the roster to improve their defense, but they should not have been able to shut down the Bears like they did. Aaron Rodgers seemed to be a little rusty, and maybe part of that was because he didn't play in preseason. And then the same thing with Mitchell Trubisky, he didn't play preseason much at all either. He did play a little bit. So maybe there was some rust in this game, although when you look at the games on Sunday, that really isn't much of an excuse because a lot of quarterbacks didn't play in the preseason and looked just fine. The Bears' defense is the real deal, and no matter how bad Mitchell Trubisky is in a game, they're going to keep the team in the game, and that's exactly what the Bears' defense did. They kept the team in the game even after the Packers had their probably only good drive of the game that led to the touchdown pass to the tight end Jimmy Graham, who had a very quiet year last year, and maybe this is a sign that he'll be more part of the offense under Matt LaFleur. But other than that, it wasn't much going on. Although Rodgers was smart, he took what the defense gave him, and he was never pressed to have to attack the Bears' defense because Mitchell Trubisky never really provided anything on his end to that made anyone believe that the Bears were ever going to score again after they scored their field goal in the first quarter. The Bears fans were not happy, and they let the Bears know it, especially Mitchell Trubisky, who ended 26 for 45 for 228 yards and one interception. Allen Robinson had a good game. 7 catches, 102 yards. From a fantasy standpoint, I don't like any of the other receivers on the Bears, and I feel like Aaron Robinson has a 100 catch season possibly in him. So I think if he stays healthy, he is a good fantasy pickup. If he's out there, he's unlikely to be out there. I think most people have drafted him. If he is on your team and you're frustrated with Trubisky, I wouldn't give up on Allen Robinson. I would keep him. Aaron Rodgers is going to do Aaron Rodgers things eventually this season. This was a tough matchup against the Bears. If you had another quarterback, hopefully you did not start him. I know on my fantasy, one of my fantasy teams, I have Aaron Rodgers. I did not start him because I knew he was not going to provide me any value in the game. I ended up starting Dak Prescott because it's a one quarterback league, and that worked out very well for me, obviously. I do think the Bears are still going to be a 500 team, maybe a 9-win team, maybe a 10-win team. I don't think they're going to get to 12 wins like they did last year because the division's a lot tougher this year. And I do think the Vikings are going to have a say on that. I still do believe they're better than the Packers. And I think this was just a bad outing because they got nothing from their offense. The Packers, jury's still out. I have to see a little bit more to believe that they're going to be back as a playoff contender this year. But this was a good start and was a big win on the road against a quality opponent. So congratulations to Green Bay on that. Okay, now moving into the Sunday games. We are who they thought they were. I love that, Delonte Walker. I love that comment in the post game in his thoughts on what the Cleveland Browns were or the hype around the Cleveland Browns coming into this game. Not many people gave the Tennessee Titans any chance. I was leery of this game all week for the Cleveland Browns. I think a team that has so many new faces and so many moving parts, new head coach, coming in with all of these expectations and hype and the weight of a city on your shoulders, is dangerous, especially against a Tennessee Titans team that did win 9 games last year, even though they didn't make the playoffs, and then 2 years removed from making it a divisional playoff round. They're well coached by Mike Vrabel. They're going to come to play. I don't think the Titans are a playoff team this year, but they're a tough out. They're going to be a team that you're not really going to want to play. And they are helped, though, because of the issues now with Jacksonville and Foles out. Colts, no Andrew Luck. So this helps the Titans. Maybe the Titans now slip into for as a lock as the second best team in that division behind Houston. Meaning maybe they are a playoff team. Because of just how they're coached, how they're going to come to play. When Mariota's healthy and playing within the system, he can do some things. And he can be adequate. Although Mariota didn't have to do much in this game. This game came down to the breakdowns from Cleveland and their undisciplined nature and all the penalties they took. And the secondary issues is the Mississippi wide receiver A.J. Brown coming out of Ole Miss had 3 catches for 100 yards. Derrick Henry went to the house with a catch. And also ran 19 carries, 84 yards. Defensively, woof for Cleveland. Not very good. But it wasn't helped much because Baker Mayfield was horrible, to say the least. Pick 6. Several interceptions in the second half when Cleveland was still in the game and then was out of the game. Mayfield has that gunslinger mentality in him. He has that, you know, go for broke mentality that, you know, it's a danger with him because, well, it's not a danger, it's just part of his game. And that's something that the Cleveland Browns fans are going to have to live with. He's not going to change it up. This is what he is. When he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's off. He was off this week. And again, a lot of new faces. And the pressure. I think Mayfield said that, hey, you know, I was pressing. And he also made some comments at the end of the game saying, look, you know, everyone's going to throw us in the garbage, but we strive on people turning their backs on us, so to speak. Now, they go to the Jets this upcoming week in a game where neither team thought they were going to end up being 0-2 to start the season. So that's a big game on Monday Night Football for both teams. On a fantasy level, don't rush out and get Mariota. I've always liked Derrick Henry, as long as he stays healthy as a running back. So he's a keeper if you still have him. I wouldn't rush out and pick up A.J. Brown. He's probably available in some leagues. In deeper leagues, I wouldn't rush out to get him just because of that one game. I wouldn't give up on any of the Cleveland players from Chubb to ODB to Landry, whoever you have in fantasy, and Mayfield. This is just a bad game. Mayfield's going to have big games, and he's going to have bad games. This is one of the bad games. But you're going to have to live with that because that's part of his makeup. The Ravens beat the Dolphins 59-10, or the team formerly known as the Miami Dolphins, until the Miami Dolphins actually put a squad on an NFL football field that is NFL caliber. Maybe they should just be called the NFL team in Miami. Maybe they should just lose the Dolphins moniker. This is one of those things that we haven't seen in the NFL in quite some time. We saw what the Dolphins did in regards to their trading away players, cutting players from early in the offseason. They were going to go young, and that was it. They traded for Rosen, but I think somewhere between training camp and the preseason, they have decided that Josh Rosen isn't going to be the answer. So it was kind of a wasted trade. And they know if they tank, that if Tua doesn't come out. Herbert Haber from Oregon will. And one way or the other, they're going to have their franchise quarterback. And they won't admit to this. And I'm sure Coach Flores is going to coach his team hard and expect a lot of out of him because that's out of, in his makeup. But this team has so many deficiencies on all areas of the field that they can be exploited by really good teams and playoff teams. And Baltimore is a playoff team from last year that improved. Going into this year, they improved the running back position. They improved the wide receiver position. And Lamar Jackson, who I'm still not a complete believer in him, because to me, this game has to be thrown in the garbage because Miami didn't field an NFL squad on Sunday. And because we haven't seen this in a while, the league's not going to do anything to Miami in regards to competitive balance or just purposely tanking your season, which the NFL really never does anything. Remember, Detroit did that before about a decade ago, and that landed them Matthew Stafford. So you had to think that Miami, nothing's really going to come of it for them other than the fact that they'll be lucky to win two games this year. Maybe they'll win three. Maybe they'll beat the Jets, or maybe they'll beat Buffalo. They'll be a team that isn't, that's middle of the pack, you know, that may go in there taking them lightly, and you still have Fitzpatrick that can make some things happen, and if a game is close, 20-17, Miami might sneak out and win a game. We've seen it before in the NFL. This is overreaction game in regards to what happened in this game, because everyone's going to be all over Baltimore and everyone's figured Miami is never going to win another game this season. I've already heard this week how Miami's going to be lucky to be 1-15 and they'll probably end up 0-16. I don't know about that, but I do know that they're not very good and they're definitely not going to win four games. I think 4.5 was their expected win total. They're not going to get anywhere near 5 wins this season. This team is terrible, and there's not much you can take out of this game because Baltimore had it so easy. Jackson was good, though. 17 for 20, 324, 5 touchdowns. Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, A.J. Brown's, Antonio Brown's nephew was awesome. 4 catches, 147, 2 touchdowns. He was available in most of the fantasy leagues I've seen, and even leagues that I'm in. I'm trying to get him. And if he's available in your fantasy league, I'd pick him up too. He's so explosive. He's so fast. You're just going to have to live with the fact that there are games where, because he is tiny, and Lamar Jackson, until he builds this up with back-to-back-to-back weeks of good play, has a little bit of untrust for me to want to just pick up, play a Baltimore wide receiver every week. But Marquise Brown's a good receiver to stash in your roster, so that's something that I know I'm going to be doing. I mean, I can't speak for you and how you're going to run your fantasy teams, but that's what I would be doing. He's available, like I said, in most leagues. He is a pickup, no question. If you had a Baltimore, if you have Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson, you're feeling good right now about your fantasy team, and hopefully you started Lamar Jackson. I have a feeling that some people did not start Lamar Jackson, especially in one quarterback leagues, probably kicking themselves in the you-know-what right now. But on a Miami side, in regards to fantasy, I would say, if you have a Miami player, you're probably best to cut him and cut him now. I'm not sure what value you'll get out of him. I have one Miami player on one of my fantasy teams, and that's Albert Wilson, who maybe the only valuable player on their roster in regards to fantasy. And that's because, and well, at least for me, because he's only valuable because this is a PBR league that I have him in. And he is their only viable target. And Fitzpatrick being a gunslinger, there's a good chance Albert Wilson could have a 10-catch, 12-catch game every 2 or 3 weeks. So he provides you some value there. Other than that, there's not really much you're going to get from the Dolphins this year. If you have the Dolphins defense on in fantasy, I say why. They're a automatic cut this week. There's no reason to keep that because they're not going to provide you any value. Oh, yeah, the Dolphins play the Patriots next week. Yay for the NFL having to put that together. As although the Patriots historically play bad in Miami, now that they have Antonio Brown and how they, well, they always beat up on the Steelers, but how they just completely humiliated the Steelers. Imagine what they're going to do to Miami. Vikings went, well, Vikings at home beat Atlanta fairly easily. It was 28-0 at the end of the third quarter. Atlanta got a couple garbage touchdowns late to make it 28-12, but I don't know what's going on with Atlanta at this point. I think for me, Dan Quinn is no question about it on the hot seat. Of all the games that we've gone through so far, and of the four we've gone through, and this is the fourth one, this is our first hot seat head coach. This was not good. They seem to be going in the wrong direction and seemingly not recovered from the Super Bowl 3 years ago. They just continue to get worse. You have Matt Ryan, you have Julio Jones, you have Calvin Ridley, you got Mohamed Sanu, you have all of these weapons, Devontae Freeman, and on offense, and you only score in the fourth quarter. Now, I know Minnesota has a good defense, but that's just terrible. And Minnesota pretty much had their way on offense for the first three quarters. Dalvin Cook was running circles around the Atlanta defense. And Kirk Cousins was good Kirk Cousins. Not the bad Kirk Cousins. We need the good Kirk Cousins most of this year. That's at least what the Vikings need. And this is looked like the Vikings team from 2 years ago that went to the NFC title game. We'll see if they can keep that up. But a good start for the Vikings. Terrible start for the Falcons. Falcons play, I think they play, I want to say they play New Orleans next week. We'll check on that when we go through the lines. But an 0-2 start in Atlanta would not be good. And it definitely wouldn't be good for Dan Quinn. And for the Vikings, we'll see where they go from here. On a fantasy level, there's no reason to panic either way. Atlanta players, if they're not good this year, the defense, at least you know they're going to be able to score late like they did in this game. You got a last-second touchdown from Julio Jones, so that was good for fantasy. I'm worried about Devontae Freeman. He's not really putting up the numbers he used to in fantasy. Hopefully you did not pick him high in your fantasy draft. For the Vikings, Dalvin Cook looks all the way back from his injury finally. And, you know, you can never go wrong with Thielen or Diggs. I didn't get much from the tight end position for the Vikings this week, but they didn't really need to use. It was pretty much a Dalvin Cook show this week. So Vikings have a lot of weapons and they're very interchangeable. But no reason to panic in getting rid of anybody on either of these rosters in fantasy. In my opinion, I would staying pat with that. And again, like I say, key of fantasy, having deep teams. So if you have a deep team and you're able to interchange out players, then you're going to be A-OK. Bills recovered from 4 turnovers in the first half. And if you want to add the safety that the Jets got in the second half, which I'm going to add, I would say they had 5 turnovers and still beat the Jets. So a +4 turnover margin plus a safety, and the Jets were up 16-0 and it came and still lost the game. Why did the Jets lose the game? Bills defense is top 10 in the league. I've said that on the Game Day Q Sports Experience. I'm standing to that. The Bills have a really good defense, and they kept the Bills in this game. 1-2. Mosley went down for the Jets in the third quarter when it was 16-0, and the Bills were driving. The Bills ended up getting a field goal on that drive. He did not come back in the game. I think they said it was a groin. That was a big loss, because all of a sudden the Jets defense forgot how to play defense without him in the game, showing how important of a pickup he was in the offseason for Baltimore and how crucial he is to everything the Jets do on defense. But one player should not cause you to lose a 16-3 lead in the fourth quarter. 2-3. The Bills came out and threw the ball, I think they said 18 or 19 times to start the game without running the ball, with a second-year quarterback who is shaky and hitting open receivers. Although he did make some good throws, it was just the turnovers kept stymieing their drives. They got down the field, they were moving the ball, and then Josh Allen would either throw an interception or... I think he fumbled a snap on a fourth down. The one interception, it was a pick six in the first half. He threw it behind Cole Beasley and Mosley snatched it and ran it in for a touchdown. But in that fourth quarter, Josh Allen led 2 drives, 85 yards and 80 yards down the field for the Bills. He ran it in from 3 yards out for the first touchdown and then threw a 38-yard strike to John Brown with 3 minutes left to give the Bills the lead for good and win the game. One of the big takeaways, so from that though, the spark, which is the third big key to this game, was Devin Singletary, who only had 4 carries, but he had 4 carries for 70 yards and really was a spark plug to the Bills' offense, especially when Mosley went out. The Bills relied on the veteran Frank Gore early, but really weren't explosive enough on offense. And one of the things that I know in this league, especially with these defenses and how complex they are, it's so much easier when you score quick. The Bills are trying to put together, and when you watch them, they try to put together 12, 15, 18 play drives. It leads you to make a mistake eventually. And that's exactly what a second-year quarterback like Josh Allen did. When you have to rely on long drives because you're not dynamic enough on offense, then a mistake's going to happen. What happened in the fourth quarter, they sped it up. They went into a kind of a sugar huddle. Devin Singletary gave them some bigger plays in the running attack that they weren't getting from Frank Gore. And then Josh Allen was able to hit bigger plays down the field with his arm, that 15, 20-yard chunks that allowed the Bills' offense to finally get going and erase the lead. Sam Darnold played okay. He struggled with the Bills' defense. I think he had like 5 or 6 balls batted down. On the last drive, when the Jets got the ball back, when they went to fourth down, they were 4th and 10, and they weren't able to convert the first down, and the Bills got the ball back and were able to run the clock out. On that series of 4 downs, 3 of those balls that he threw in that series were batted down. And I think he had two or three more others that were batted down at the line in a game. The Bills weren't always getting the sacks, but they were just getting consistent pressure in his face. The Jets have some serious offensive line issues, and they have some serious secondary issues. And the Bills aren't ready for prime time, but teams like the Patriots or even Cleveland coming up could exploit the Jets for these weaknesses, and it could mean a long year for Adam Gase and the Jets if they're not able to clear these up. And the problem is, in this league, you don't just offensive linemen just don't appear. Secondary issues don't just go away. So these are things that the Jets are going to have to deal with the entire year. And if you're a Jets fan, I'm extremely worried about this. They were able to trade for, well, they needed to trade for a secondary player, but they traded for Demaryius Thomas. Demaryius Thomas was traded by New England to New York to open up a slot, obviously, for Antonio Brown. So they have Demaryius Thomas, but again, their big issue is offensive line and secondary. As far as fantasy is concerned, Josh Allen still provides some value in deeper leagues. He wouldn't be my starting quarterback, but a good backup, or in a two quarterback league, a guy you could throw in there because he's going to give you the running and he's going to give you the throwing. Devin Singletary doesn't get enough touches yet for me to be picking him up in fantasy. I know a lot of people may just jump out and grab him, but you're going to have to live with, at least for the next 4 to 6 weeks, Buffalo being conservative, still using Frank Gore in key situations, and not putting too much on the rookie's plate. John Brown will be as good as Josh Allen. So the 7 catches, 1 touchdown this week was great, but doesn't mean he's going to do that every week. As far as on fantasy for the Jets, Le'Veon Bell looked like Le'Veon Bell. So that's a good sign for people to have him fantasy. And Sam Darnold will have better days. This just wasn't one of those days against this Bills defense. It was a bad matchup. And I think in fantasy, if your quarterback isn't Drew Brees or Tom Brady, I would say don't play. Beware that your quarterback may struggle against the Bills defense. So if you have a different matchup or another quarterback that you like just as much, if you're going against the Bills defense, I would say play that other quarterback and not the quarterback that's going against the Bills defense this year, because I think you will be in for a long day in fantasy looking for points against this defense. Redskins got off to a hot start against the Eagles and were in the head 20-7, and then reality set in that the Eagles are way better than the Redskins, but a good effort. Like I said in that Game Day Cube sports experience, the Redskins, I think Jay Gruden is a good coach, and I think he coaches the team up, and they have a decent defense. They have a decent offense. They got a veteran signal caller in Keenum. They got some veterans in key spots on the offense. They got Geist back at running back. This isn't a terrible team. This is a team that's going to be between 6-7, maybe they get to 8 wins. And they made life kind of uncomfortable for the Eagles. They made life uncomfortable for the Eagles. And then the Eagles got it going in the second half. Wentz got it going. They were able to use Darren Sproles to kind of energize the offense. DeSean Jackson had a big day. Welcome back to Philadelphia. 8 catches, 154 yards, 2 touchdowns. So he really hurt the Redskins secondary. DeSean Jackson was also able to beat Norman in a lot of one-on-one situations in the secondary, something that's not ideal for the Redskins. That's why they're paying Josh Norman big money. They need Josh Norman to win that battle. He did not win that battle this week. DeSean Jackson was solid. Great game for him. And the Eagles got the win they desperately needed. The Redskins get the cover, as I thought the spread was way too high. It was 10, and the Redskins did, well, people might say a backdoor cover because they scored a touchdown in the last 2 minutes when the Eagles were up 12, but the Redskins deserved to at least cover the spread because they Again, we're up 13 at halftime. So, good game for the Eagles. I think a good game for the Redskins. I know there's no moral victories on a fantasy level. I don't think there's anything, you know, yay or nay instead of getting rid of keeping guys. I think Keenum is a interesting pickup if you want to pick him up. He's probably available in a lot of leagues. I mean, he was 380 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's not somebody I would start, but I guess in certain matchups, he might be good. Maybe against the Giants or another team that has substandard secondary play. When Keenum can be very effective. Although, I thought the Eagles just, for the most part, you know, the Redskins were behind in the second half, so Keenum threw a little bit more than he normally probably would have. And I thought the Eagles got off to a poor start in the game. And that happens in NFL, but good teams overcome it. And the Eagles are a good team, and they overcame it. And they're 1-0. Rams beat Carolina 30-27. Weird game because this was a three-point game, but I never thought at all that Carolina was ever going to win this game. I thought that the Rams used offense was steady. I thought Goff was steady. I thought that they used Gurley wisely. They mixed in Malcolm Brown as RB2, much like they did at late in the season with Anderson. So Gurley's not getting all these carries, getting all this wear and tear. So they're going to use kind of a two-headed monster at running back, which is smart. It was good to see Cooper Kupp back out there. Cooper Kupp is a very important part and a big safety blanket for Goff. He had a good game. Cam Newton did not have a good game. He didn't really play a lot in preseason, and when he did play, he got hurt. I think two drives into that Patriots game in preseason, so he didn't really... He doesn't look sharp. McCaffrey was great. Showed his fantasy value, no question. 19 carries, 2 touchdowns on the ground, 10 receptions, 81 yards receiving. He is a fantasy monster, especially if he stays healthy. But I worry about Carolina because if you take away Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, yes, we know Greg Olsen, named the receiving core. I guarantee you wouldn't be able to. And those other guys have to step up in their offense, getting separation, getting open. And that didn't happen in this game, which made Cam look bad. Of the 25 completions that Cam had, 10 were to Christian McCaffrey. That is not going to get it done for Carolina this year. They need the receiving core to be better. That means he's checking down a lot because he's not getting receivers open downfield. And that was a big part of why I felt like Cam struggled in the game. So for me, Cam's fantasy value is lessened until they find a receiver to emerge. And he's probably on most teams because he's Cam Newton. But I would question starting him if you have another quarterback to go, or even a two-quarterback league. I would put him at my third quarterback right now, at least until I see some changes in the receiving core. No matter, because Christian McCaffrey, there's going to be games where he's just taken out of the offense. He had a great game this week, but teams are going to build their whole game plans around Christian McCaffrey going forward until these other receivers step up. And yes, they still have Greg Olsen, but Greg Olsen is getting older and might have lost a step a bit. And Greg Olsen is going to work those seams, but the explosive plays come from the wide receivers, and they have to be part of the game plan. I'm sure they were. They just weren't getting open. Again, for his fantasy, for the Rams, Gurley, great. Malcolm Brown, good handcuff if you want to pick him up. Looks like he's going to get a lot of carries. And Cooper Kupp, valuable. Valuable pickup in fantasy because you know he's going to get targets. I think he's probably available probably in half the leagues, if I had to guess. And I'd say that if he's out there in the waiver wire, I would definitely pick him up. And for people that have Woods for the Rams, he's going to take a hit and catch as long as Kupp is back. So you have to remember that. Cooks may take a bump too. Although there's always two or three times in a game where Goff is going to try to throw it deep to Cooks. This is kind of written into Cook's contract, I think. So Cooks is going to be feast or famine. He's going to have games where he's quiet like he was this past week. And he's going to have games where he's going to have big numbers because he's going to have that 50, 60-yard touchdown. Jaguars hit a big snag in their plans, so to speak, as Nick Foles will be out until mid-November as he was sacked and then buried into the ground, all the weight of the defensive tackle landing on his upper body, which led to a broken clavicle. So that's very unfortunate for a Jaguars team for me, and I think for some people was a sleeper in AFC, especially with their defense. Although, even before he got hurt, maybe we all were rethinking that on how easily Patrick Mahomes diced up the Jacksonville defense in the first half. Patrick Mahomes went 25-33, 378, three touchdowns. LeSean McCoy, newly minted Kansas City Chief, part of a two-headed monster at running back, had 10 carries, 81 yards. And Sammy Watkins, oh, how do we forget about him? Tyreek Hill got hurt in the first half. He had to be taken to a hospital. Looks like he's going to be okay. Scary moment for Tyreek Hill, who had some internal injuries, probably on a hit that he suffered in the first half. So, well wishes go out to him. But Sammy Watkins, 9 catches, 198, 3 touchdowns. Forgot Sammy Watkins is on the team, like most of you probably did too. I wouldn't be surprised if Sammy Watkins was available in some leagues. And if he is, he's worth a flyer because healthy Sammy Watkins is just as good as the top 10 or 15 wide receivers in the league. Problem is we never get a healthy Sammy Watkins. So if we get 16 games of healthy Sammy Watkins with Patrick Mahomes, they get Tyreek Hill back. They got LeSean McCoy now. Travis Kelce, I would say the best tight end in the league, arguably, right now. Oof. Defense still has some issues. They gave up 26 points. They let the rookie quarterback, Minshew, who came in the game for Foles, look like an all-pro quarterback in the last two quarters. Minshew looked really, really good. Looked better than any rookie quarterback should look, having to be thrown into week one. Which has to scare you if you're a Kansas City fan in regards to your defense. Spagnuolo is probably going to take it like I thought he was. They're going to live and die by the blitz. They're not going to sit back. They're going to come after the quarterback and let the rest happen. And it worked in knocking Nick Foles out of the game. But is it going to work the entire season? Who knows? Remember, 26 points to a Jacksonville team that I'm not sure how many times they scored 26 points last year. And most of those points coming from the rookie quarterback. 19 of them, to be exact, as Foles got the first touchdown. It was actually the touchdown pass for Foles where he ended up getting hurt and out until mid-November. I wouldn't rush out and get Minshew out of fantasy. Now, some people will because they're like, well, look at those numbers. It's a Kansas City defense. Relax. LeSean McCoy is worth a flyer if he's available. Does he look like he's going to get more touches than I expected he would get in this offense? Sammy Watkins, if he's available, definitely worth a pickup. And just because of Sammy Watkins' potential, Sammy Watkins has a potential of 15 touchdowns this year, if he's healthy. Jacksonville defense, woof. It was Patrick Mahomes, but expected a lot better from them. And Jacksonville, still same old Jacksonville. When things are going right, they want to fight. Instead of, like, playing football, they want to throw fists and talk. And you don't win games by talking. You win games on the field. All right. That concludes the early games on Sunday. So now let's move into the late games on Sunday afternoon. Chargers beat the Colts 30-24 in overtime. Keenan Allen, 8 catches, 1 touchdown, 123 yards. Phillip Rivers, just steady Eddie, 25-34, 333, 3 touchdowns. Marlon Mack was great for the Colts, 25 carries, 174 yards, a touchdown. T.Y. Hilton had a touchdown. Brissett was good enough. Is he Andrew Luck? No, but the Colts, don't sleep on them. Don't just wipe them off. The Colts played toe-to-toe with the Chargers. The game, and it felt like a playoff game. Eckler was really good at running back for the Chargers and puts a lot of more pressure on Melvin Gordon to end his contract, because I think the Chargers are like, well, we have Eckler, and they like the backup as well, so they're not overly concerned if Gordon comes back or not. Takeaways from this game are Chargers still look like a team that is one of the best in AFC, and the Colts, to me, still have a heartbeat, and I think the Colts season will be decided on how they play in the division against Tennessee, against Houston. How those games go will define whether the Colts are a 6-win team or a 10-win team. Chris Carson had a 2-touchdown game for Seattle as they were able to outlast Cincinnati 21-20. Andy Dalton, 4-18, 2 touchdowns. So the Zach Taylor into the Cincinnati offense was a good thing, because they discovered John Ross, who had been not good, or kind of, if I had to say, in his first 2 years, a bust. But John Ross was 7 catches, 158, 2 touchdowns. As he played the Brandon Cooks role in the Cincinnati offense. Tyler Boyd played the Robert Woods role, and I don't know how that will stay the case, because if when AJ Green comes back, I'm sure AJ Green will be the Robert Woods role, and Tyler Boyd will play the Cooper Kupp role. But the Bengals showed that they're going to have a heartbeat on offense. They're going to be able to score points. The problem is that, are they going to be able to stop anybody on defense? They did good enough to keep this a close game, as they were ahead going into the fourth quarter, but were unable to hold it. And they're going to be able to score points. They're going to be adequate on offense. And that's going to mean they're going to win some games that people might not have expected them to win. But the big problem for the Bengals is going to be that defense. Seattle, a good opener for Clowney, as he's now in fold. They still have some worries, some on regards to keeping Robert Wilson upright. And also, you can kind of tell why Seattle admitted that they were in Antonio Brown. I won't even call it a sweepstakes, but we'll get into that later. But they were trying to get in on Antonio Brown. And you know why they needed, they could have used that one more receiver to help them offensively. Otherwise, they're going to continue to have to play a lot of these close games like they had to today. But they were able to escape, get the win. So Seattle starts up 1-0. And to me, again, Seattle is the second best team in the NFC West behind the Rams. Although San Francisco is going to have a say in that. And we'll see what happens in those games between San Francisco and Seattle. Giants have all kinds of issues in the secondary, as they made Dak Prescott I wouldn't even say Roger Staubach. He looked better than Roger Staubach. Troy Aikman. Dak Prescott looked like Troy Aikman. He had could have written a series of novels. Not just one novel. A series of novels in the backfield waiting for to throw the ball. As the Giants had no pass rush whatsoever and seemingly forgot how to cover seam routes, post, and slants, or pretty much forgot to cover anything. Prescott, 25 for 32, 405, 4 touchdowns. Giants, saving grace, Saquon Barkley, 11 carries, 120. They have Saquon Barkley. That's something. Defensively, they don't have much of anything. And Michael Gallup, 7 catches, 158 for Dallas. If you're weak in your 4th and 5th wide receiver, worth a flyer in fantasy. Just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that the Cowboys are going to throw it all over the field like they were able to in this game. But the Giants allowed them to do that because the Giants are substandard in the secondary. So the Cowboys started out 1-0 and still, to me, look like one of the 4 big-time contenders to come out of the NFC and represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. My list in regards to those contenders are the Cowboys, the Saints, the Rams, and always struggle with that last team. The last team always gets me like, what would be that last team? I'm torn between the Eagles and Seahawks. So I'm gonna add both of them. Those are my 5 teams to watch. I feel like one of those 5 teams will be in Miami in February. Detroit and Arizona played to a 27-all tie. Can't get through week 1 in the NFL without a tie these days because of the shortened overtime to 10 minutes and, you know, the rule where every team gets a possession, which leads to more ties. And that's what happened here. Although Detroit probably had the game won as they had the ball and looked like seemingly had a first down that would have allowed them to run the clock out. But for whatever reason, assistant head coach called timeout before the play started, which mean this the play never happened, and then Detroit were unable to pick up the first down. Arizona got the ball back and tied the game, and then we went to overtime, and both sides kicked field goals, and the time ran out on both sides as it led to a tie. I was so surprised in fantasy how underrated TJ Hockenson was. He was so low rated, and I think in a lot of drafts he went undrafted. Which means everyone's going to be racing to pick up this guy. 6 catches, 131, 1 touchdown. And you have to think that Matthew Stafford is going to utilize Hockenson a lot this year. I have no idea why he wasn't rated higher in a lot of fantasy drafts. I picked him up on one of my fantasy teams, so he quickly added dividends for me. I was very happy about that pickup. And I got him late in the draft. Again, it helps to pay attention to the actual NFL draft. And if you don't watch college football, have some idea of rookies to watch coming in fantasy. And a lot of times in these fantasy leagues, a lot of people have no idea who these players are until they play in the NFL. And I've always been good at fantasy because I watch a lot of college football. So I know these players before they come out. TJ Hockenson is one of those players. David Johnson, 18 carries, 82 yards. Had a modest day. I thought he'd have a bigger day in this offense. I think this offense is going to be like a faucet that spits out and like a with air in it, where it comes out, because air raid offense, get it? It comes out fast, and then no water comes out. And then it comes out fast again, and then no water comes out. That's kind of like what this offense is going to be. So It looked good in the second and the fourth quarter. It didn't look good at all the first three quarters. And I think you're going to see a lot of that in the Carolina, or excuse me, in the Baltimore game this week against that Baltimore defense, where there'll be pockets where it looks good, and then there'll be big swoles in that Baltimore game where they're not going to be able to do much of anything. So that means the fantasy players on Arizona are hit or miss, particularly David Johnson and Fitzgerald. Now, they ended up, Fitzgerald in particular, ended up having great numbers, but don't expect that every week, at least the first half of the season. Maybe by the mid part of the season, this offense will finally find its footing. And I think it's just kind of understanding things. And I think Kingsbury has to get acclimated to the league. This was a good tie, considering everything, for Arizona. Although they probably wanted to win the game, and they probably feel bad about the tie. They shouldn't. They should be happy with the tie. Detroit should feel terrible about the tie. This is a bad tie in a tough division where you need wins desperately if you're going to make the playoffs. Minnesota, Chicago, and Green Bay on paper are talented, more talented than Detroit. Not by a lot, but they are. And Detroit needs to win games that they probably should win. So this was a bad tie for Detroit as they move on into next week. Stafford was good, though. 385, three touchdowns. Again, Hockenson, if you have it, if he's available in your fantasy league, pick him up. Detroit's not, again, Detroit's not a bad team. They're not, to me, quite at the level of the other three teams in the division. I think they're in a very difficult spot in this division, and they nearly need to win the games they're supposed to and win close games. So they're going to play their fair share of close games in the division as well, and they need to win those games if they want are serious about making a run at the playoffs this year. Somebody made a joke that Jameis Winston may be on his way to be playing in the XFL by next year, and it's not really a joke because it's kind of real. I don't... The interception that Winston may had as they were behind, and they were trying to bring him back, where I think they were trying, it would look like a screen, and he did something that I would expect a high school quarterback at this level or at this stage of quarterback evolution not to do. And that's throw no look off your back foot into the crowd, not even knowing who's going to be there, just a whim and a prayer. Fortunately, he threw it to the side of the field that has Richard Sherman on it. And ball hawk like Richard Sherman sees the ball, you know it's going the other way. So Jameis Winston not only had one pick six, he had two pick sixes. 49ers win by 14. The quarterback whisperer, which he's known as, will not have much patience, I feel like, for Jameis Winston. I feel like the Jameis Winston experiment is grinding to a halt. Either he starts playing better, or he's just not going to play by midway through the season. And they'll move on and focus their efforts on one of the quarterbacks, whether it's Herbert or Tua, that are coming out, whoever Miami doesn't get for the first pick in the draft. So, not good for Tampa. Kittle had a couple touchdowns come back on penalties, but the hype is real. This wasn't a fluke. He is a major part of that San Francisco offense. 8 catches, 54 yards. So he's definitely worth... He seemed to go too high in a lot of fantasy drafts, but he's going to produce. No question. And Garoppolo, didn't need to do much because Jameis gave him the game. He seemed to struggle a little bit, Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is going to be better as the season goes along, but a lot of those quarterbacks that have come back from that injury, it takes a year. So he may not be right completely until next year. But he's out there, and he does have a smart mind, and he does get the ball to where it needs to go, and that's important for the 49ers this season and going forward as they hope to make a run at the playoffs this year. 8.5 wins with respect to win total. I still think that's really high, but what do I know? Steelers on Sunday night humiliated themselves again against New England. The defense played better than they normally did. They did force the Patriots into 4 field goals. They played better man-to-man coverage. Although Philip Dorsett torched them, and that was mainly because their third corner couldn't cover Philip Dorsett. And they seemingly couldn't do anything on offense. It was bad. They were trying to, they seem to don't have a second wide receiver, and that's dangerous. Now, I thought they would play James Washington more, but they seem to want to put James Washington as a third wide receiver, maybe because of his size, but he seemed to be only used on deep routes and streaks. So then they went to the idea, so to speak, of, okay, we have Juju, but we're going to, alongside Juju, we're going to put Dante Moncrief. Now, Dante Moncrief had 10 targets in the game. 10 more targets than anybody, even Juju. He caught 3 balls for 7 yards. That's a guaranteed loss if you have to rely on a receiver like that and he cannot produce. New England was smart on what they did. They put Gilmore on Juju. And Juju did have 6 catches for 78 yards, but really did not provide anything to the facilities for Pittsburgh. So it forced Roethlisberger, who had 47 attempts. So he only targeted Juju 8 times out of 47 attempts. So 39 times he had to go someplace else with the ball. And a quarter of those times was to Moncrief, who provided him nothing. And their offense could do nothing. 13 carries, 32 yards on the ground. James Conner, nothing. Patriots defense looked really good. Patriots defense looked so interchangeable, especially in the secondary and at their linebacker position, that it reminded me of the 03 and 04 Patriots defenses, who were a nightmare to play against because they would just match up like a chameleon against any opponent they saw fit. These are the kind of defenses that Belichick loves so much. And I think one of the reasons why he didn't even bring in a defensive coordinator, because he saw what he could do with this defense. And he felt like they could dominate some really bad opponents and be very difficult to move the ball on against good opponents. And then I'm not really sure if Pittsburgh's even good anymore against medium and the pack opponents in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got to find a ground game. Connor's got to be better. And they have to find a second wide receiver because Dante Moncrief is not going to cut it. So if they are not willing to put James Washington in as a second wide out, then they better find somebody else to emerge. They probably should have traded for Demaryius Thomas and not the Jets. Although I don't know if New England would have traded him to Pittsburgh. They probably traded him to the Jets because they know the Jets aren't a real serious threat to New England getting to Miami. As far as fantasy is concerned, I'm not a big proponent of James Conner in fantasy as it is anyway. So if you have him, remember what you have, and I hope you're not relying him as an RB1. Roethlisberger throwing 47 times at his age without a ground game is a recipe for disaster, especially a guy that struggles staying healthy. Even though he's getting the ball out quicker these days, Pittsburgh's just asking for him to get hurt. It remains to be seen what happens with the Patriots' offense with Antonio Brown in it. Edelman led with targets this week with 11 of the 36 pass attempts from Tom Brady. So that's about a third of them. Philip Dorsett likely will be the odd man out. And Gordon will be the third wide receiver. Dorsett will be the fourth wide receiver. And Antonio Brown will be 1A, 1B to Edelman. And then they will probably, again, it's per week. So this week they smartly used Burkhead and White out of the backfield catching. They both had 5 catches. Burkhead had 8 carries, 44 yards. He led the team in the ground game, and Sony Michel was ineffective. Again, New England, it doesn't matter. They just will find a way. All right, Monday games. My first takeaway from the New Orleans-Houston game, great game. Houston, did I put Houston as one of my contenders? Oh, no, I did NFC. But Houston, to me, is still a serious threat to win the AFC. I know everyone's just going to anoint New England at this point, but you have still a 42-year-old quarterback, and he's one hit away from being down to Jarrett Stidham. So I would say Houston still is a serious threat to be in Miami. They can score it well. Hopkins is probably, to me, the best. I mean, by eye test, he's the best receiver in the game right now. I know you cannot prove that. I think it's so hard to prove. But he's definitely in that argument. I don't think anyone would deny that. But some of the catches that Hopkins makes in these games are unreal. And I know he had some drops last night, but wow. And then you have Will Fuller on the other side, who's healthy now. And I liked what they were able to do at the running back position with Hyde. I thought Hyde gave him a lot, and Johnson. So they're both interchangeable. They do desperately need Watson to get out of bounds. He probably could have ran out at the 2-yard line on the play that he looked like he hurt his tailbone. Taking unnecessary hits. He's not the biggest guy, so he has to be very cognizant of staying on the field and staying healthy and not taking those hits. I thought Tunsil, who came over from Miami in the trade right before the season started, struggled at times, but I think that's going to happen. I think it was communication breakdowns on the offensive line. It's tough. They had a lot of new faces on that offensive line, and then Tunsil's a new face just added in. So give it a few weeks. Don't panic if you're a Houston fan about the offensive line. Give them a few weeks. This was a tough out going into one of the loudest places in the league. And thinking about they had a lead with 37 seconds to go, I thought the offensive line did A-okay. Drew Brees is still Drew Brees. He's money. 370, 2 touchdowns. Houston, what are you doing on the last drive? There's 6 seconds left. He's not throwing to the end zone. Why are you in prevent defense? They just gave him an 8-yard pass, knowing he has a timeout left. There's no way they should have been in that defense, and they got what they deserved. Drew Brees saw they were backed off, took the 8-yard pass. Lutz hits this 58-yard field goal. Have a nice night. Hope you enjoy your plane ride or Probably could have bus back to Houston. Maybe they flew back to Houston. Kamara is absolutely dangerous when the open field. Michael Thomas, one of the one of the great wide receivers that we have in the league. This was awesome. It was one of the funnest games I've seen, and I think at the end of the day, I mean, there's still 240-some-odd games to be played in this regular season. This will probably go down probably in the top 10 best games of the year. And I know it was week one, but it had everything. It had two great quarterbacks. It had drama. It had late scoring. It was, turns out, the first Monday Night Football game that had two lead changes in the last minute in Monday Night Football history. As far as fantasy, if you have all these guys, Houston guys, New Orleans guys, keep them. Even if somebody didn't really put out the numbers you thought they were going to do, these offenses are going to be very explosive all year. Raiders overcame all of the distractions and the headaches that were created by Antonio Brown and rallied around their young roster to win this game. They're not going to have a lot of glory moments at Oakland this year because their schedule is absolutely nightmarish. And they're going to have a difficult time winning, I'd say, 5 games. But they got this one. Joe Flacco, horrible. Horrible with a capital H. You know what's really bad about Joe Flacco? You look at his numbers. 21 for 31, 268, 1 touchdown. Okay. Doesn't look too bad, right? But you have to watch the game. And he was just, until he's pressed to make a play, Flacco tends to always throw short. So it's always going to be captain, check down, whatever you want to call it. 5-10 yards, safe throw, safe throw, safe throw. The offense is so much pressure on it. Much like I was talking about earlier with Buffalo and Josh Allen. To run these 12, 16 play, 18 play drives to score a touchdown. And on the road against a fired up defense, young defense is flying around the ball in a hostile environment. That's going to lead you to play a lot of close games or put you behind the number too often. And the Broncos never got going because Flacco never got going. Cortland Sutton had a good game, but he was targeted like half the time by Joe Flacco, who forgot that he had one of the better receivers in the league and Sanders on his roster. They got nothing from Landry. He couldn't get anything going on the ground. As soon as Raiders sense Landry was going to get the ball in a running play, they shot the gap, and Landry just could not. He had no holes. Couldn't do anything. And that was a perfect time for Denver to open it up, spread them out, go wide, attack with the passing game, especially against that young secondary. They didn't. And maybe that's part of the Vic Fangio conservativeness with, you know, being an old defensive coach. Hey, just keep the team in the game. We'll stay in it. Maybe we'll get a turnover. And you just ran out of time. Before you knew it, it's 21-9 in the fourth quarter. Then 24-9. They score a touchdown, but there was only 2 minutes left. Game over. In this league, that is an old way of playing football. 20 years ago, that's how things were ran, even 30 years ago. Now, this league is about Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield. It's about scoring points. It's about attacking. And it's not about offense by numbers. And the Broncos, if this is what they're going to be this year, it's going to be a long year in the Mile High City. So that was the week at large, NFL week one. That was my recap. Talk about fantasy. Talked about a lot of things. All right. It's time to take another break. or the first break, because we haven't taken a break in an hour. So I'm going to take a break, and then we are going to get into the NFL Week 2 lines, and then end on some Antonio Brown talk. So I'll be right back. Do you have a website that you're looking to maximize traffic to, generate additional leads, and increase revenue? Well, let me tell you, Buffalo Marketing Company is a digital marketing agency that can help you. The agency develops digital marketing strategies that involve, but not limited to, search engine optimization, social media campaigns, website design, and branding. Go to buffalomarketing.company today to find out more. Now back to the show. All right, I am back. Let's get into the lines for week two. Thursday night, Carolina is hosting Tampa Bay. And the line opened as Carolina's a 5-point favorite. It's since moved up to 6.5. This is the Jameis Winston allergic reaction in regards to everyone betting against Jameis Winston. Cam Newton wasn't very much better last week either, so beware of that. So the line being bet up to 6.5 is interesting. Again, public opinion is Jameis Winston's terrible. It's week one. Maybe the San Francisco defense is really good. Who knows? But that's what's going on with that line. Tennessee opened as a 3-point favorite on Indianapolis as they host the Colts on Sunday at 1. It stays at 3 points. The over-under is 44.5. That moved up from the opening line of, well, it opened at 44. Some books have it 44.5. Some books have it as high as 45 already between Indianapolis and Tennessee. Detroit opens as a 2.5, or opened as a 2.5-point underdog at home against the LA Chargers. The line remains there. The Mirage has it at 3 points for the Chargers, so moved it up by 0.5. The over-under is 47 as it opened, and now it, most books have it at 48, so it's bet up. I think part of that is Hockenson's factor in Detroit. Chargers look like they have a good offense as well, so public may be thinking this might be a high-scoring game. The line, or lack of line movement, Indianapolis and Tennessee says, I don't think a lot of people know what to expect out of that game. But we'll see how that goes as week goes along. Buffalo open as a 2.5-point favorite with a over-under of 43. The over-under at most books has moved up to 43.5. There's a book out there that has it at 44. The spread has moved down, so Buffalo is now only a 2-point favorite against the G-men. Public opinion is there's not much separating the Bills and the Giants. The Bills win in New York was kind of lucky, and that the Giants had a offensive heartbeat, at least against Dallas, but were overmatched by a better team. And that playing at home against a Buffalo team that is not as good as Dallas gives the Giants a much better chance of winning this game. Baltimore hosts Arizona. So it's a battle of the two dynamic quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson and the rookie Kyler Murray. Baltimore, 13.5-point favorite, over-under 41.5. That's how it opened. The over-under has since moved to 46.5. 5-point movement in the over-under from how it opened. And Baltimore still stands as a 13.5-point favorite, although you can find it at 13 at some books, and some books you can even find it at 14. So there's a lot of disagreement on where this line should land. The line is so high because of what Baltimore did to Miami. Overreaction because Miami's so bad. We really don't know how good Baltimore is. And Arizona, the over and under going up high. The thought is the air raid offense. Well, I just mentioned in the previous segment that the Arizona offense is going to be hot and cold all year, and particularly in the first half of the season. I could easily see Arizona coming into Baltimore and only putting up 3 points. So be very careful about how that over-under went way high, 5 points high. Remember, it was set at 41.5, so there definitely was a fear of a rookie quarterback on the road, but people seem to have forgotten or lost that fear somewhere, forgetting that Baltimore still has a really good defense. 13.5 is a high spread, too. Okay, Patriots. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Patriots are playing at Miami. Opened at 14.5, over under 47. Obviously, this got bet up real, real high and quick. The over under now is, at most books, the spread is 19. So the spread's been bet up 4.5 points. That's how bad Miami is. Miami's either going to be the bookie's best play this season or their worst nightmare, and Miami's going to cost them money all year. 14.5 is way too low, so anybody that got it between 15, 16 are going to get paid because this game's going to be a rout. Patriots are going to destroy Miami. Even 19 may not even be high enough. And the over-under sitting at 48. Tough one because the Patriots do have a good defense. And Fitzpatrick is a turnover waiting to happen. So this is going to be very interesting. It's tough to pick a game when it's that high in the spread, but something to think about. Dallas opened as a 7-point favorite on the road against Washington, over under 44. The line has since moved down to 5 points on most books. Dallas favorite, over under 46.5. Redskins home opener, and Redskins have some respect now. I think people look back at the game against the Eagles and said, hey, the Redskins are bad. And they're playing at home. And these games tend to be close, these rivalry games between the Redskins and Cowboys. 5 points, is it terrible of a play for Dallas here? It's definitely within a touchdown, but do have to keep in mind that Redskins are a good team, and Dallas historically, well, at least I should say historically in the last few years with Prescott and Zeke, tend to play a lot of close games with the Skins. Houston opened as a 9.5-point favorite, over under 44 at home against Jacksonville. The line has since moved down to 8.5, 8 in some places. And Jacksonville sits at 43.5 now, so that moved down a point. Points went down because Foles is out. The spread went down, not sure why. I think maybe some love for Minshew, but he's a rookie quarterback now going on the road. I would be wary of this. This looks like a tasty pick here if you're out there. Houston, even though you give it up more at a touchdown, Jacksonville's defense did not look good last week. The only fear is that this is a division game, and these two teams tend to play close games like they have in the past, so you could get burned if you take Houston with the number. Pittsburgh opened as a 4-point favorite at home against Seattle, and the over-under was at 46.5. And at most books, that's kind of where it's staying. There's a few variations, but it pretty much still is 4 and 46.5. Pittsburgh looks to bounce back after losing against the Patriots. I expect them to play a lot better this week. They really still need to find a second wide receiver. Seattle, it is a road game coming across country in the 1 o'clock window, so you have to remember that. And Seattle, again, tends to play a lot of close games. So, should be interesting. Should be a good one, though. One of the better games of the week, Seattle at Pittsburgh. San Francisco opened as a 1.5-point favorite in Cincinnati. Over-under was 45. Over-under in most books stays at 45 today. And the Bengals are now a favorite in most books by a point. A book out there that has it as a pick'em. I think people went back and looked at the tape and said, hey, the Bengals played well in Seattle, and it's their home opener, and a lot of people are San Francisco believers. I'm one of them. A line that is definitely worth a look, with the Bengals only having to, at least right now, having to give up a point. And again, in some books, you can get it at pick'em against the Niners that are playing their second week in a row on the road across country. And they're not playing Jameis Winston. That's going to gift wrap them a win this week. Green Bay open as a 3-point favorite at home after their big win against Chicago, against their division rival, the Vikings. The over-under is at 46. Remember last year, this game ended in a tie, although the Packers had the game in hand, but they were unable to seal it. The over-under has since moved down to 44.5. The line still remains 3. I like the Vikings a lot in this game. I think the Vikings are for real, and I'm not really sold on the Packers yet. But that's not my pick yet. I'll save my picks for the sports experience. Kansas City, 8.5 open, 53.5 over under. On the road against Oakland. The line now sits at 8. So some love for Oakland off their performance against Denver. And the over under is at 52.5. Tyreek Hill has already been listed as out for Kansas City. So keep that in mind. Rams open as a 3-point favorite in the game of the day at home against New Orleans, the rematch of the infamous NFC title game. 53.5 is the over-under. The over-under has dropped slightly to 53, but the spread remains 3-point favorite. Rams at home against New Orleans, pretty standard 3-point home favorite. So should be a very interesting game. Denver open as a 1-point favorite at home against the Bears. That line has quickly moved after watching Denver's pathetic performance on Monday night. 2.5 is where most books have it right now. Chicago favorite. Over-under dropped to 40.5. Smart people, anybody that could get that line at -1 Denver and jumped on that, very smart. And smart to jump on it now before it gets to -3. I don't know how Denver opened as a favorite in this game over Chicago. I'm not sure who or what came up with that line or what they were drinking, but anybody that watched that Monday night game knows that Denver had no business being favored against a 12-4 team from last year, no matter how badly they played on Thursday night. Atlanta, Philadelphia open as pick'em. Also, Atlanta is playing Philadelphia. For some reason, they were playing New Orleans. Playing Philadelphia, open as pick'em. This is a Sunday night game. The line has since moved to 1.5. Some books have it at 2. Most have it at 1.5. Philadelphia favorite, over under 51. Over under still remains 51. This is a lot about, do you believe that Atlanta is done and dead and finished? Or do you believe that there's still a heartbeat here and they're still a good team and they can come and put on a performance and something that can allow them to win this game against a good Eagles team? The Monday night game is a flashback from the first Monday night football game, but that first Monday night football game was in Cleveland, where Broadway Joe and the Jets went to Cleveland in 1970. We fast forward 50 years later. Cleveland goes to Gotham to take on the Jets. First of a lot of primetime games for Cleveland. Maybe overreaction considering how bad Cleveland looked last week. Opened 2.5-point favorite. Cleveland 45.5 over under. Stays 2.5 points Cleveland. Some have it at 3 Cleveland. Over-under remains 45.5 on Monday Night Football. Quick recap of my picks in regards to that were made on the Game Day Cube Sports Experience in the NFL. I finished 5-2 for the week. 4-2 on picks and my lock of the week, which I did not offer on the podcast, was the Cowboys over the Giants. So I'm going to do something specific with the lock of the week. I haven't really decided yet what that's going to be. If I'm going to... Am I going to do it right off the bat? I think that what I'm going to end up doing is that I'm going to share my lock of the week on the website Sunday morning. And then I'll do that for 4 or 5 weeks. And say if I go 5-0, then I'll start offering that lock of the week up as part of something. Maybe you have to, you know, like most people, most handicappers, you have to pay. I'm not going to just give it to you for free. But you have to prove that you know your merit. So the lock of the week will be part of the picks, just not part of the podcast. So 5-2 for the week for me in the NFL, which is a good week. I can't take a mulligan, but I do want to put an asterisk. I did take Jacksonville, but who knew Nick Foles was going to get hurt? Remember, they still scored 26 points with a rookie quarterback and only lost by 14. So if Nick Foles is in this game, it's safe to say that this would have been a lot closer game than it finished. And the other one was a complete other mishap by me. Never, ever, ever, why ever, and I promise you, ever, pit the Pittsburgh Steelers against the New England Patriots. Either I'm not going to ever pick it, or I'm just not going to pick it. I'm going to pick New England every single time. I give up on Pittsburgh in their chances to beat New England. I thoroughly believe that until Bill Belichick retires, that Mike Tomlin-led Steelers team will never, ever beat the New England Patriots again. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it, but I truly believe that. All right. Before we close, Antonio Brown is a Patriot. Sure was a lot has happened since the last time we were on. Obviously, Antonio Brown, and I hinted to this on the Sports Experience, I felt like he had an ulterior motive for all the stuff that he put the Raiders through in an attempt to get out of town. And it worked. The Raiders released him, as I thought they would end up doing on Saturday morning. And sure enough, by Saturday afternoon, the New England Patriots swoop in and sign him. Within minutes of him being available on the waiver wire, which says to me a lot of things. One, the Patriots knew all along they were going to do this. Two, Antonio Brown had been talking, maybe not with the Patriots officially, but with somebody on the Patriots side, whether that was Tom Brady, long before Saturday happened. Maybe it wasn't weeks before, but it was definitely days before. So Antonio Brown played a game on the NFL, and the NFL won't do anything about it, as they are spineless, as they always are. And the Antonio Brown will allow, is now allowed to join a Patriots team that doesn't really need him, and the Patriots are going to be the favorite to win the Super Bowl, and still the most hated team probably in America outside of Boston. What's new? Same old, same old. The beat keeps going on in the NFL. The beat keeps going on for the Patriots. Antonio Brown doesn't care if he gets booed. He'll say, hey, I'm rich, and I'm about to get a Super Bowl ring. But it adds to drama in the theater of it. Most people root against the Patriots style wholeheartedly outside of the Boston area, or unless you're a Patriots fan. And we'll see what happens. I don't think Patriots are an automatic lock because they got Antonio Brown. I think it helps. But the ball can only go to so many people. They already had Edelman. They already had Gordon, as long as he can stay on the straight and narrow. They already had Dorsett and the running backs, White and Burkhead at the backfield, and Sony Michel in the ground game. And they have a guy named Tom Brady. Maybe you heard of him. So they're going to be just fine one way or the other. Antonio Brown And again, I'm a big proponent of the player, of players in general. I just felt like, and he doesn't owe the Raiders anything, but I feel like there was a better way here. And I think he owes the Raiders an apology, to be honest with you. And maybe he doesn't believe that, but there's ways to do things. There's a right way to do things and the wrong thing to do things. And if he was a real man would come out. I'm not saying he's not a real man. I shouldn't say that. If he's a man, he should come out and say, hey, you know what? I just wanted to play for the Patriots. I just want to win the Super Bowl. You know what? People respect that. But to go through all this craziness with the helmet and acting weird and just being just completely trying to blow up this whole Raider situation on purpose and act like it wasn't all about getting to the New England Patriots is kind of trying to divert any person's intelligence, including my intelligence, in regards to an understanding that there was a bigger play here. And that bigger play, again, was him going to New England. Or maybe it might have just been to New England, just getting out of Oakland. I felt good for Derek Carr last night. What a performance. Showed that he has the potential still to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. And Derek Carr takes unfair abuse because he's played for substandard teams since the year that he almost won MVP before he got hurt. And he was really good last night. And that was kind of a referendum on, hey, a lot of people would say, oh, Antonio Brown was like, oh, he got out of there because the Raiders suck and Derek Carr's not any good. Well, Derek Carr proved that not to be true. So good for Derek Carr. But that is what's going to hold over the Raiders' head and Derek Carr the rest of the season, that Antonio Brown left because Derek Carr's not any good and the Raiders aren't any good. And maybe the Raiders aren't any good, but or John Gruden doesn't know what he's doing. But John Gruden at least has a Super Bowl ring. Antonio Brown doesn't have one. And Derek Carr almost won an NFL MVP. Antonio Brown can't say that. So that's me defending the Raiders. Not trying to knock you, Antonio Brown. I love you as a player. I think you're a great player. I just feel like I think the wash here is to say, just be honest and admit to what you were up to. That would be the wash. And you probably won't do that because you don't want to get in trouble with the league. And you don't want to get in trouble with the Patriots. Or you don't want to destroy your image in any way. But your image is kind of taking a hit already the last few weeks. So maybe you should really rethink that stance. This was a Game Day Cube NFL show. We'll be back next week to talk about what happened in week 2 and go back over the NFL lines for the upcoming week 3. I am Isaac E., and I am signing off. We'll see you again next week.